Hey, Pulp fans, thanks for your support. Whether you're subscribing to the podcast through iTunes, visiting pulpmx.com, streaming the show via the Stitcher app on your smartphone, or buying from our show sponsor, btosports.com, without you, we could not do this. You can still type M-A-T-T-H-E-S upon checkout at btosports.com if your order is $100 or more for a discount. Lastly, for some insider info and maybe a laugh or two, follow Mathis's Twitter updates at twitter.com/pulpmx.
Episode of the Steve Mathis Show, there is a high
chance ability
you will either learn something
a lot of people don't know,
you left thinking, or make you say to yourself,
dude, that's so funny.
The bottom line is,
this podcast serves as archival
documentation
of this interview.
Welcome to the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOsports.com Trans World Motocross podcast show, and I have a king on the line, and that would be the king of Supercross, Jeremy McGrath. What's going on, MC?
Not much, man. What are you guys up to?
Hey, thanks for doing this. I know I've been trying to get a hold of you, and you've been racing and meetings, and you're a busy guy.
Yeah, you know what's funny is it's funny. It's so hit or miss. You know, like when I'm busy, yeah. I'm super busy, and yeah. It feels like, man, I should just be racing again because all this stuff I'm dealing is sure taking up a lot of time.
Yeah.
But then when I'm off, you know, it's great. I got like, you know, this whole next week is really good. But this last week was crazy. I was in Chicago doing the pre-show for Supercross.
Uh-huh.
And then I was home for a day, and then I turned around and went to Phoenix to do some stuff with Black Box Solutions, this other game company I'm working with. And I mean, that's just, I don't know, I'm trying to keep my face out there and do some business.
Yeah, I think you're doing a good job. And you raced Genoa Supercross 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago now.
Yeah, I did. Well, I mean, I don't know, I'm not sure you call it a race. I started the race and was running second for a lap or two and ended up going over the bars.
Yeah, let's start there. I heard it was rough. Yeah. Was it like a 3-3-3 section or something you were doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, the section, I think the way they built the section was you come out of a left corner. Mm-hmm. There was kind of a 3 foot to 3 foot, like a double.
Yeah.
And then they had kind of like a peaked up lip with three rollers after that. So it was, I think it was made to be like a 2-2-4
uh-huh.
and then land in the tight right corner. But we ended up tripling it. Like Wyndham, myself, Barsha, a few of us did, but the landing was super tech, you know, it was a tight little landing, and if you missed it, it was super sharp. So anyway, leave it up to me. I missed it. I came out of the corner. Track was kind of soft. I seat bounced the jump. Got a little kick, and then I was like, oh, man, I think I can pull this off. But because it started to kick me over, I didn't want to jump off.
Yeah, no.
And, well, you guys saw online probably the second half of the crash. But when I hit the...
Oh, I didn't see it. I didn't even know it was on there. I need to check it out. I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. When I hit the face of the jump, it just threw me under the bar, like my knees and everything, just like tucked up against the bars, and I just did a total like front flip. It was crazy.
I did that same thing and broke my pelvis, exactly that thing.
Well, what's weird about that is I have a big bruise mark on my pelvis, like it wrapped around my whole stomach where the clutch lever hit me.
Yep.
And then I'm still today, like 2 weeks later, walking around with a little bit of a hurt hip, because when I did the front flip, as you probably noticed when you did yours, it wants to jerk your legs out of socket.
Yeah, it pulls them.
So Yeah, and you guys know I had the trouble with my hip before, so it's not the tightest hip in the business, you know what I mean?
So, in the business? It's not the tightest hip in the business.
Yeah. So it seemed like it wanted to dislocate it a little bit, but
yeah.
It is getting better. I raced in the dirt last week, so I must be okay, you know?
Yeah. Eric Bernard, I went to Bercy the weekend after, and first thing Eric Bernard says to me is, MC hit the dirt hard. And then Beaker's like, it was ugly. Like, everybody kept saying it was ugly, you know? And at your age, dude, you don't want any ugly crashes.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess I was just lucky that it didn't lawn dart. When I hit the front wheel, the bike flipped so fast, I had dirt on the back of my helmet.
Oh, really?
Not even on the visor or anything. So
flipped you all the way around.
I sort of got a little lucky on that one, but... Yeah, I try to stay off the ground these days, especially at my age, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And besides, man, like, if some kid is there, some Italian kid, and I mean, I don't care that you're, you know, long retired or whatever, you're still Jeremy McGrath and the King. I don't want to see the King crash.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Well, no, that's true. I understand. I mean, I'm a fan to guys the same way. I mean, it's like Jordan or whatever. You don't want to see him, like, you don't want to see him break his leg on the golf or on the basketball court, you know?
Yeah.
I understand.
My hero
growing up. The way I looked at it, I was pretty lucky, you know?
Yeah.
So.
My hero growing up was Mark Barnett. Like, just loved him. Absolutely loved him. And and he made a comeback in like 89 with Tough Kawasaki. He was number 101.
And I remember that.
Yeah. And he made a comeback. And I went down to Florida with my dad to go riding. And we went to the Miami and the Atlanta Supercross. And. Miami, the one where Bradshaw crashed 18 times in the sand there. Anyway.
Yeah, and he almost won, didn't he? Still almost
he
win?
He still went. He did win. Yeah, he did win.
Oh, he did win. Yeah. It was a 125 East race.
Yeah, exactly. And so
I remember that.
We go to Atlanta, and Barnett's there, and he's having trouble tripling, you know, what a triple that everybody's doing. And, you know, all the top 20 guys or whatever. And then he goes and tries it, and he just eats shit, and he gets carried out on a backboard. Dude, he gets carried out on a backboard. My hero, Barnett. And like, I'll never forget that. Like, that was my last sort of memory of Barnett. And the week before, he was riding at Croom when I was there, and he crashed and threw his handlebars in the garbage, and I went and dug him out. So I dug out.
You know what? He's still the bomber, man.
I know.
He's
but
still Barnett. But, and it's easy to forget some of those memories when you have so many great memories, but. I totally know what you mean.
Some kid in Genoa, his memory of Jeremy McGrath right now is an ugly crash. You don't want that. That's the whole point.
No. You know what? Mostly I don't want that for me and my kids and my wife.
Yeah, never mind. Never mind that kid in the stands.
Never mind the fans. I want to be around my house, be able to play out on the swing set with my kids, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. But it still must be kind of cool. To be able to have the promoters approach you with, you know, a wheelbarrow full of money. To come race, like, it's kind of cool, right? Like, you're still...
Well, you know what, it is. It's flattering. I mean,
right?
It's totally flattering. And you know, I think that I do ride a lot, and some of those guys are recognizing that, and like some of the little clips we do on video and all that stuff. I mean, it's a bummer that it worked out the way it did because, man, I feel like I'm riding like the best I've ridden right now in a couple years.
Right.
I've been riding at the Honda track a lot, and. We've got the Honda working really good now, and I'm just having so much fun. And I was like, it's funny that I crashed in Genoa because I was like, man, I'm going to do good. I have a shot at it this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what I was mentally, that's what I was thinking. And to have it go the way it did, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a reality check.
And also, so, don't you feel bad, too? Like, I know Langston felt bad at Bercy. Don't you feel bad because you got to go to the promoters and be like, dude, I'm out. Like, I barely gave you your money's worth. But, I mean, they understand, and you understand. But it sucks, right? It sucks.
No, I feel totally bad. I feel totally bad. And, you know, Paul Lindsay's the guy who called me about the race because he works with the promoters over there. And, you know, Paul's great. And we had that, you know, last year was, remember that debacle last year where I tried to go to Genoa, but it was Thanksgiving Day. I tried to leave, and there was, like, it took me 2 hours
That's
to drive
true.
20 miles on the freeway, and I left myself like 4 hours to get to LAX.
Yeah.
Ended up missing a flight. I ended up having to wire them money back, and there was just such big, you know, I felt super bad over that. So I'm like, all right, this is the redemption year. I'll be able to go back and put on a good show.
Right.
And then, you know, everything will be okay. And
yeah.
To be honest, all the European races, I've always raced throughout my career. Yeah. I've never had that happen to what happened last week in Genoa.
Really?
I've always finished and always ran really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then to DNF like that was just, it was kind of a fluke deal, but the track was tough. It was rutted. I feel like I have been riding good, but it was a tough track for me.
And K-Dub was on another level, I guess. Did you stick around?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Kevin was awesome. He was riding so good.
I just got back from Bercy, and I wrote a story for it on Trans World Motocross, and it's my fifth or sixth time there. And I watched some old videos. Xavier sent me some old videos, and one of them was you and Demarie on a 125, just going at it.
When I first came up in 91 and 2.
Yeah, Pete Condon. He
was on Suzuki.
Yeah.
We had some throwdowns. It was good.
Yeah, that was dirty. But talking about Bercy, just touching on it a little bit. Love that. Do you have a favorite one? You just love that event overall? You went there four times, I think.
Bercy was always the main one. I think I did Bercy like 10 years.
Yeah.
And that race, I mean, Xavier and Eric and those guys, that's a good show over there.
Yeah.
It gets a little monotonous by the second or third day of riding, but
yeah.
The event itself is really good.
Yeah, I always just think you and Villeman had some epic races. Oh. And the crowd just loses.
Oh, man, you know what? It's funny with my career. You know, I went through two or three generations of guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, at first it was like coming up in the 125s, battling with Yves DeMaria. Then it was, you know, I had to race Everts there and you know, whoever, I guess, maybe raced Bale once there.
Yeah, I was wondering about and then
it was Stanton and me, you know. Then it's Bradshaw and me. And then it's Emig and me. And Larry Ward was always just the man over Europe. So, I mean, I have a lot of history with Bercy, and that's always a fun place. You know, the experience is fun, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Larry Ward, fourth all-time in Bercy wins.
Behind. Yeah, that's amazing. Villeman's, who has the most?
Villeman's got the most. You're second. And who's third? Oh, Stewart's third. Because they had three main events when Stewart raced, too, I think. So they counted all that. Just like maybe they had three with you too. I don't know. But anyways, Larry Ward, like seven wins.
Larry's the man. He was so awesome in Europe too, you know. The guy was he's on another level than he ever was here.
Yeah. Did you I guess it doesn't really apply to you, but Stanton told me one time that he made more racing in Europe than he did all season long from his contracts. Did you have sort of like, were you pulling it in your heyday in Europe?
It was good. It was really good. I made, of course, Bercy for me was...
Was it always the highest?
Always the highest because it was 3 days race. I mean, at my top billing, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
It was like 100. I'd get 100,000 to go there.
Right.
So, I mean, that's for 3 days of race and when I was the number one and all that stuff. So those guys were always, you know, they'd get a real fair deal for those races.
Yeah. Yeah, so financially it was almost like, hey, I don't maybe don't feel like going, but I have to, like Stanton was saying too, you know.
It was one of those things that how can you pass that up?
Exactly. So. I used to, you know, when I worked for Ferry, he would pass up 30 grand all day long, and I just like, one day you're gonna kick yourself. And he told me probably 6 months ago, I really kicked myself now.
Yeah, and you know what? I sort of had the same feeling. I passed up a lot of races for a lot of money too.
Did you? Yeah.
But
yeah.
what I would do is I would make sure that I capitalize on at least maybe 5, 6, 7 of those every winter. You know what I mean?
No, he never did any. He had Genoa, Barcelona, Bercy, all saying 30, 35 grand, and he would be like, "Nah, I don't want to go." And I'm just like, "You're an idiot."
Like you said, Timmy's probably going, man, I could use those extra dollars right now. But, you know, there's a fine line between what the rider feels like he needs to get prepared at home and all that stuff. And, you know, for me, looking at that situation for a guy like Tim Ferry, he's like, he could have used that as practice.
Yeah.
Especially for his Supercross stuff, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, you know, Supercross was always my main thing. So I mean, I'd like to stay home and get prepared for the season and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I sort of had it. I guess I would say I had it dialed. You know, I didn't really need extra weekends in Europe.
Yeah.
But like you said.
Also,
hey,
too.
All day long, passing up those good deals, that adds up.
Dude, and also, too, you are in a no-win position. You have to win when you go over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't just ride around in third because then everybody's freaking out and wondering what's going on. So you're putting yourself out there even more. You know what I mean? Everybody expects you to dominate.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I was supposed to win.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know, it was like.
Except for Bercy.
Thank God for me, it's built in inside that whatever I'm doing, if I'm racing the lawnmower, I want to win. You know, I never felt satisfied going over there and racing a race and just being, cruising around for the money. It doesn't matter if it's $10 or $1 million, you're going to get the same effort out of me, you know?
Yeah. And bench racing, obviously Bercy provides many hours for sitting around bench racing. And I was talking to Villeman about you, and I said, hey, when you first started beating MC every now and then, like when he was 934 and, on the Yamaha, I said, what was it like, at the Yamaha track during the week? Like, was it, he said, MC never changed. He was cool. He did his motos. Like I did my motos. I was like, was everybody out there with stopwatches? And it was the different, David's dad was there, and then you had you and RL, and I said, what was that like? And he said, he never changed. He was cool. And I was just like, okay, all right. I was expecting, because when he beat you at Phoenix that first time, it was like you could hear a pin drop. We're like, what the hell just happened,
Yeah,
so,
That's
just funny.
Well, you know what? As you know, looking back on my career, there's a lot of guys that ended up beating me, on certain occasions. And Villeman was one of them. I mean, look at Lusk. I mean, people were counting, a lot of – hanging their hat on him a couple of the seasons that he was going to be the guy. And, I was always confident in the long haul.
Yeah.
And, I was okay getting a third or a second to a guy because I knew that maybe the next week they couldn't get that same effort, I was always comfortable with knowing my program. And not worrying about like, okay, we won a lot of races, but you know what? I had to remember that, hey, it's okay to get a second. It's okay to get a third. I mean, we just need to stack up them points. And as it turned out, I didn't really need a lot of that because I won a lot of the races. But in the end, that kind of stuff, like that midweek practicing never bugged me if I wasn't the fastest guy.
Yeah.
Because I always, whatever my plan was throughout the week, I kept the same plan and made sure that I peaked on Saturday and not on a Wednesday.
Yeah. See, when I was at Yamaha, like it was Reed and Villeman and Timmy, and that shit on a Wednesday afternoon, that meant everything. And I used to think to myself, come on, who cares? Those guys, Chad would have, his guys filming Villeman, and I'm just like, oh my God. But it was, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Some of these guys, some of these guys need that mental boost on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I could care less how Wednesday went. It was really just about putting your time in, getting your seat time, making sure the bike was good, testing if that's what you were going to do, and really making it happen on Saturdays. And to be honest, there's not a lot of guys that can put in every Saturday's work,
Yeah. No, for sure. Hey, some of these questions I'm going to ask you too were submitted by people on Twitter and on my website. So just FYI on that. People were interested.
Yeah.
Hey, so is racing over for you? Are you done? Like besides the Genoas and this and that, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. I've been done, especially. It's funny because, like I said, I've been riding good lately and at the track.
You're riding good at the Honda track from different, like Shane Drew or somebody. It's like maybe, you think to yourself, maybe he is. And of course, you were just at Feld, and they're probably saying, hey, we wouldn't mind if you race a race. You know what I mean?
So, well, you know what? I think nobody would probably mind that. But, once again, we go back to that Mark Barnett example. It's like, thinking about it and actually having something like that happen, it's just unrealistic. I mean, for me, I don't want to be in that situation anymore. And once again, who cares what the lap times are on Wednesday? I feel like I can ride and stay close and ride pretty good during the week with these guys, which that's what I enjoy these days.
Yeah.
To think that I would go out and actually race a Supercross again with an AMA Supercross again is just, it's unrealistic.
Right.
You know, I'm such a fan. I love being there watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I really couldn't think of putting myself in that situation anymore.
Right. Hey, I was talking to Antonio Caroli at Bercy, a really good guy. He told me, you know, you were his hero, and he exchanged jerseys with you, and he hugged you so much he didn't want to let go.
Yeah. That, you know what? That's funny because the last couple of years, you know, I've been able to see Caroli's progress and all that and really never met him, but he looks like such a fun guy. And we did exchange jerseys at Genoa, which was really cool. I actually have it right here. I'm going to get it framed and put it in my trophy room and stuff. And it was a cool experience meeting him because he's a cool cat.
Yeah, he was. He said he hugged you and I did not want to let go. I'm just like, all right, dude.
Yeah. Well, once again, that's pretty flattering. You know, he's a great champion, and I don't think of myself like that, so it's a little strange. But
yeah. Well, it's kind of my next question was, this 4-time world champion was pretty much reduced to a 5-year or a 12-year old kid when talking about you. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's funny because, like I said, I don't think of myself like that. And
hey, did you have any? Go ahead.
He is a great champion, and it's just, I don't know, it's kind of comical in a way to think of that like that.
Have any weird motocross superstars who either blew you off or were really cool when you were a kid?
No, you know what? I didn't, because I was a fan from the outside. I was always too shy.
Oh, were you? Yeah.
To come up and talk and get close to these guys. I was more of like an outside fan,
mm-hmm.
like just with the magazines and stuff like that. I didn't really have any up close and personal experiences with any of these guys.
Yeah,
I sort of just did my own thing.
Jack never pulled
and
for the.
I was a shy kid, so
yeah.
it would have been hard pressed to get me to go up and talk to one of these guys. You know,
Jack never popped for the pit pass, the extra $10.
Yeah, no, Big Jack wasn't rolling out with the extra pit passes.
Yeah, exactly. Who was your heroes growing up?
Well, 81, I saw Bomber. He was pretty awesome. I guess my heroes, though, were always RJ, for sure.
Yeah,
and I like the Dogger, Ron Machine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you and I, at our age, you know, and I mean, there were so many great guys.
Yeah.
There's so many awesome riders to watch. But the two that stood out were Dogger, because, I mean, I liked the Osho, too. He was awesome. Really liked Johnny a lot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was like, I mean, look, we had Jeff Ford, we had David Bailey, we had Brock Glover, we had Jeff Stanton.
Ron Machine.
I mean,
you name it.
Yeah, Ron Machine. I mean, you name it. We had it seemed like we had the best era ever to watch, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, I was a huge fan of Bradshaw, even though Bradshaw's younger than me. I was a huge fan.
I know, I can't believe he's younger than you. We talked about that, I think, last time, it seems so weird that he's younger than you.
It is weird. I mean, it is weird. It's like he was almost a different generation than us.
Yeah.
I guess because he was so young when he moved up to the 250. But
right.
Yeah, it's funny. Emig and I were talking about that last week in Chicago, and you know, he was on Bradshaw's. They were on a team together, and he was saying the same thing. Like, man, he was so awesome, and Jeff was a fan of Damon, of course, too. But
yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of great guys, but RJ always stood out because he was the show off kind of guy, and that's sort of how I am.
Yeah, no, good point. You're right. Hey, let's talk about this year. Your Racer X video that came out definitely caused some feathers to be ruffled here and there.
Yeah. I stirred up a hornet's nest with that one.
Yeah, you did. And you know what? You don't come out too much and say too many things about people. You know, you kind of whatever, but obviously you had some opinions, and Simon, I guess it was Simon probably who was asking.
Yeah,
you
it
questions.
Was Simon. It was Simon.
What do you think about that video? You take anything back? Do you care about it anymore? Any thoughts on that?
No, hey, listen, I'm in a position now to speak the truth.
Right.
And I think that with our sport these days, the problem is there's not a lot of truth flowing out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's changed in the sport. I don't like it so much. People are afraid to say what they really mean. And, you know, in that video, I didn't say anything mean.
No, no.
I just stated the facts.
Yep.
And it's funny because with Porcell, what I said about Porcell, that was totally queued up by Simon. It's like, hey, I just answered the question. People, and there was only, I got to say, out of the 700 people or whatever that commented on that, there was only a few haters on there.
Yeah.
Which I was pretty psyched about, you know. I think that you know, that's one thing that I think, or I wish the guys would get back to, is like just saying how they feel, you know. I think as fans, when we watch these guys, it's like I really would like to know the real guy, not the political guy.
And
there's a way you can do that without being mean. And with that interview, and, I mean, obviously the Porcell part of it got the most attention. I didn't feel bad about what I said. You know, I mean, it's crazy. With Porcell, here's a story about Porcell, with me and my history of Porcell. You know, I'm not a huge fan. I don't even think about him. I could care less. But, you know, a few years back when Honda was courting Porcell when he was coming over to America, before he actually got hurt, and he came out to the Honda track, and with I think it was, I don't know who it was, his dad or somebody, and Eric Kehoe and I were there, and we were walking around the track, showing him the track, and there was a line on the track that was pretty gnarly. It was like jump over this triple, land on this little small bump, and triple up to the top of this tabletop, and it was a line that looked like it was impossible, but we did the line. I mean, Wyndham, myself, like,
yeah,
all the guys, we did the line, and we're walking the track telling Porcell, okay, we do it this way, this way. And we come to this section, tell him the line, and he's like, oh, no, not possible. Nobody does this. And I'm like, what? Yeah. I can't believe you'd say that. I'm telling you we do that right now.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not possible. Nobody does that. So in typical French fashion, he's sitting there telling me to my face that it's not possible. I'm like, that's it. I'm done. This guy's crazy. So that was my initial meeting with Porcell.
Yeah.
And since then, I could give two shits about the guy.
Yeah.
So all I was doing is just trying to give a little hand, like with Eric, and we're walking the track. I mean, Eric was courting a guy, and if I was trying to do the right thing for Honda. I mean, if the kid was going to ride for Honda, then obviously my job to this day is to help the kids when they need some help and just be around. I mean, I have plenty of experience, and the kid was just flat telling me in my face that it wasn't possible. And I was like, well,
you're like, dude, I don't even race anymore. And I'm jumping this.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't race anymore. What do I have? I don't need to, you know,
well,
I don't need to talk to you about this. So
here's his response in MotoVert magazine, to your interview. McGrath, he heard stuff and interpreted them, but how can he know? I am asking for too much money. He had a great career. Maybe he's a bit bitter that it's all behind him, and maybe he's a bit jealous of the young guys who succeed nowadays, which actually, knowing you, couldn't be further from the truth. But what he did in his career is incredible, but he cannot put himself in my position. He never had an accident like mine to really realize the level of risks we are taking. So that's what he had to say to your video. Any thoughts on that? I guess
I know
you're not
bitter. Pretty mellow.
Yeah.
Obviously, we all know that I'm not jealous of anybody. I could care less.
Yeah.
I'm happy for these guys to succeed, but all I want to see is some humility.
Yeah.
You know, these kids, for the most part, they're all pretty dumb. I mean, look at here's a black and white example. Look at Trey Kinnard. Mm-hmm. Look how thankful this kid is. Look how happy he is to be in the position he is.
Yeah.
And then you get a guy like that. Look, I don't know if he's holding out for money. Simon queued up the question.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was the rumor. All I was doing was answering the rumor. Listen, I'm not denying that Christoph Porcell is an awesome rider. He is.
Yeah.
And he's a great rider. And you watch him, he's got good flow. He's super technical. The kid's a great rider.
Yeah.
But my complaint is with his attitude. And, you know, we've seen over the past years that typically the French guys that come over here are the ones with the attitude.
Yeah.
And with the exception of, say, Roncada, Tortelli, I mean, even Vuleman at the time has had plenty of attitude.
Billiman early on was definitely a handful early on, and he seemed to, you know, after he got married, and, you know, all of a sudden he seemed to break out of his shell, and people loved him. But for sure, the first 5 years, he was.
Yeah. And look, I'm not here to bash anybody. I mean, Christoph Purcell is a great rider. You can't deny that. And, you know, maybe if I got to know him, it'd be a whole different story.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the circumstances in which I answered the question. I understand the risk these guys are taking. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I understand the value in having to have first-class stuff when you're racing against first-class guys. I understand all that.
Yeah.
But a guy in his position, if it is true, if it was true that he is holding out for money, then it just seemed a bit funny to me. I mean, right now, in the state of American motocross and American economy, it's good to be working.
To
me, it's like, why would a guy alienate himself from getting a job? And I think that him having his problems with getting a ride is not due to his ability to ride the motorcycle. It's due to his attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, too.
And, that's it. You know?
Right. No, I think you're right. And I think, too, you know, you're definitely not bitter or jealous. You probably made more than any of these guys in your heyday because you were around in a better day. You know what I mean? So you're not jealous or bitter. I don't get that at all.
No. But, yeah. No, not at all. I mean, look, I am more than happy with and content with the way my career went. I feel lucky to have or to be in those positions to be able to capitalize on all the wins I got and all the team sponsors I got. And,
yeah.
I mean, look, but I can tell you this. The reason I'm still around and in this sport and having good relationships and good friends and riding and doing videos and all that stuff is not due to my ability.
Yeah, yeah.
That's due to me as a person. And in the end, when all this stuff goes away for those guys, as it has for me, that's all I have left is me.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what's carried me, and I think that someone like him could use that as an example. And that's really all it boils down to. I have a lot of friends and made a lot of great relationships and treat everyone with respect and
you're still getting
the best at job.
Yeah, and you're still getting paid from Honda, you're still getting paid from Thor or whatever, and you're still getting money to go to Genoa.
And that's not due to my resume. Of course, you know, somewhat of it could be, but most of it's due to the person that I am. And
I would agree.
And that's that more than anything for me is makes me feel proud, you know.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at BTOsports.com.
Yeah, talking about those comments on the Racer X thing, and I don't want to turn this into a big thing where I'm blowing you over the air, but, you know, talking about that the Racer X thing, like, I bring this up on our show that I have a show with Kenny Watson, him and I do this show. And
I've heard it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you were on it 1 week. I don't know if you knew that's what it was. But anyways, we were talking about it, and I was saying that, I mean, I'm friends with Chad. I like Chad. I get along with James. Ricky and I aren't really tight at all. But my thing was Jeremy McGrath was the last champion that was sort of universally loved by everybody. I mean, obviously there's people that didn't like you for how good you were, but no one could deny, I think, that you were a good guy and you were honest and you were great. And even Dungey seems like a good guy, but I would put it out there that he has a bit of a PR problem in the fact that he's not almost real. Like, he's not like a real guy, you know?
Yeah.
Do you agree with all that? Do you think, like, each kind of guy that's come after you has had more haters, let's say, than you, for whatever reason?
Yeah. Well, as a fan, I'm a huge fan of the sport. I mean, I love motorcycling. I love watching these guys race. I mean, obviously, it's my passion because I still do it today. And you know, I mean, when I have 2 or 3 hours, I load my bike up and go riding. That's what I do.
Yeah.
These guys I think you're right. They do have somewhat of a PR snafu. And, you know, we can take Dungy, for example. Dungy is an amazing rider, and he's almost got it, the package as far as the PR goes. But you're right. He's not allowing the fans to get to know the real Ryan.
No.
And, you know, then you take a guy like Chad, who he's really high and low when it comes to the PR situation. He was really good at first, then he was really had attitude for a long time. He seems to be coming back to more on the friendly side of things. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I mean, look at RC. For a long time, people did not like him. Every time he talked about, you can't deny his riding, but every time he talked, he always sort of said the wrong thing. And that was from him trying to be someone that he wasn't. And, you know, what these kids need to realize is if they're just themselves, the fans are going to give them a chance to grow up.
Yeah, you're right.
And fans are good like that. They're going to let you grow up. They're going to grow with you. But it's a lot harder to live this fake life in the media than just be yourself. Because, you know, it's like telling a lie. You know, you can't really keep your lies straight if you just tell a lot of lies.
Eventually, it's catching up,
Yeah, eventually it catches up. And that's where you see your inconsistency with some of these guys in the media. You know, look at now. The reason Wyndham is so loved is because he's so honest on the podium. You know, when people get to hear his voice, he's telling it how he feels it, and he's getting the message across very easy because that's who he is. And I think a lot of times these kids just today, they get caught up having to do the sponsor thing and all this stuff that they forget that they're real people. Yeah. And that's what the fans want to see.
I think Reed's coming around, though. His Twitter thing's good, and he's now in the position of an underdog, you know? But let's talk about his team. I equate it a little bit in some columns I've written and some podcasts, kind of like your deal in 97, put together rather late. Do you think it's the same kind of stuff? And you've been on record as saying
that. Here's the difference. You know, I mean, I might take a little heat for, you know, I took a little heat from Reed last week when that Racer X interview came out.
Yeah.
He came to the track like the following day or the next day. And he was giving me a little bit of the cold shoulder too. But you know what? Facts are facts, and I was just telling the truth. I love Reed. He's an awesome rider. And look, I'm friends with him. And, you know, he might think it's been a little hot and cold over time, but that's not due to me. It's just due to him feeling the way he's feeling. But his situation is a tough situation. He's going to have a hard time with what he's doing. And you're right. It compares to my 97 season a little bit. But here's the difference. I rolled out in 97, even though that was a late team structure thing for me, and it was sort of on its own but sort of not.
Yeah.
My bike was a factory bike. And I heard Reed, or I read Reed in one interview saying that he sort of compares his new deal to how my deal was at Suzuki or at Yamaha. But it's really far from it because, especially at Yamaha, and you know this, my bike rolled right out of the Yamaha truck right into my rig.
Yeah.
And my bike was worked on in Cyprus at Yamaha. Randy was working on it at Yamaha. So there's a huge difference in the technology side of things. And I can tell you, look, that was a great, great experience for me having my own separate team and my own all this stuff. But I can also tell you that it was awesome when I was winning, and it was the worst, and it felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders when I wasn't winning.
Right, right.
Because you have six, eight, 10 employees, all this responsibility, all this money coming in, so there's a lot of pressure to get results. And when you're a one-rider team, if you're not getting it done, the weight of the world is 10 times heavier when you have all your own stuff than it is having your gear bag in a race truck, you know?
Right. And, Reed seems to think, you know, he can – and we're lucky because we're on the age of four strokes. But, he's definitely hitching his wagon to that pro circuit thing and thinking that they can get the suspension and the motor stuff as good. He's got to get a tranny from Honda. I can't imagine him not having a tranny. Otherwise, he's just going to shred gears.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. And, you know, Reed did an awesome thing. I mean, obviously, on the selfish side of things for me, I'm kind of bummed about it. But, you know, Reed hired Lars as
I know,
he can.
Yeah.
And for me, that was an awesome strategic move on Chad's part, yep. because Lars knows that Honda in and out, and there's some tricks that Reed would not be able to do if he didn't hire a guy from Honda. So he made a good move on that part. Obviously, for me, on a selfish side of things, I'm bummed because Lars is my man, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lars and I are friends, and we've been friends for a long time now, and that's not going to change anything. But, you know, it's going to be a tough road to go here for him.
Mm-hmm. How's he look? I heard he's good. I heard he looks good.
Yeah, Chad's riding good.
Yep.
I mean, I saw him the first couple days when he was out there at the Honda track, and he was riding well. I mean, Chad is a confident guy. He's a great rider, great champion.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't see a lot of guys making this be a successful move, but if anyone can do it, he probably can.
Yeah, and I feel like he has the fans on his side way more than he ever has before the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, he's had a rough couple seasons, you know. It's been strange to see him move around from team to team, and it's not the ideal situation, and I'm sure a part of him feels like, man, why didn't my Suzuki deal stay together, or, you know, why couldn't I stay at the Cowie team or whatever, and I guess, you know, for me, the way it looks is it's sort of a last resort for him. And he's got to do well.
Mm-hmm.
But he's another guy who lived through really good times with Carmichael as far as the money goes. And if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. You know, I'm sure if he's a smart guy, and he's probably got plenty of money stacked away. So
yeah.
I don't think he's have to worry about that part of it.
Well, he told me that if he doesn't get any sponsors, he might have to dip into his own pocket for outdoors. If he doesn't get any more sponsors, but he's working on some sponsors. So, And Lars said he made two phone calls when he got offered the job, one to his dad and one to you. And what'd you tell him? What'd you say?
Well, you know, like I said, Lars and I are buds, and I want the best for him. I want him to, you know, Lars is, you know, as I dreamed of being a Supercross champion or even racing Supercross, he's always dreamed of being a factory mechanic, you know, and a mechanic for a top pro rider. And he's had little, you know, he's played with a little bit with my stuff and with Wyndham's stuff, and but he's never really got that shot. So, you know, as a fan of someone who believes you should always go for your dream, I think he did the right thing.
Yeah.
But I tried to give him the negatives to it too. You know, it's not going to be like you're at Honda and you have access to all these parts and you can make the most bitchin' machine ever.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. And I just, you know, as a friend, I just said, look, you just got to think about the negatives too. You know, but for the most part, I'm happy for Lars. And, you know, he always knows that if this doesn't work out, he's Honda's boy too.
Yeah.
So the possibilities of him coming back to Honda are high if it didn't work out. But I'm stoked for him. He needed to go out and do this.
You know, I feel like the bike, the Honda 450F, when it came out in 2009, like, Ivan didn't like it. Shorty kind of liked it. Millsaps hated it. Wyndham didn't like it. Even Reed went on the record in one of my shows as saying he didn't like it, and he doesn't think Millsaps' problem was the bike. And he got a lot of flack from the Honda guys, which is now funny because he's now loving the bike. But, you know, I think with help probably from you and from the data bike, it's come a long way. Do you agree with that? Do you think the thing, like in 2010, Wyndham's unsolicited, Wyndham would be like, I love my bike. It's awesome. And, and you know, do you think it's come a long way? Have you guys learned a lot?
Oh, you know what? I can tell you that when that production bike came out in 2009, to be honest, we were all crapping our pants, you know? the thing needed a lot of work.
Yeah.
And which, as you know, typically when Honda comes out with a product, it's pretty awesome from stock form. And, you know, this bike now, though, we've spent with Shane Drew and Lars and the Team Honda guys and Showa and all the stuff that we've had to do and put time and work on this bike, I really believe that's a bike that can win now.
Mm-hmm.
It has come leaps and bounds.
Right.
And I think the let's see, how would you put it? I think for a while there, as you said, when Reed admitted in one of his shows he didn't like it, for a while there was this knock on the Honda, like, hey, that thing's not that good. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you now that bike's one of the best bikes in the paddock for sure.
Yeah, I think you guys, like I said, I think you learned a lot of things. Shorty said the same thing, and as much of a nice guy as Shorty is, he never crapped on it too much, but he said how much better his new bike was. And, I mean, Tedesco, he won't ride one of those things ever again. He's scarred for life. But like I said, it's come a long way, and it's good. I think that's good. It's a credit to you because that's part of your job is developing that bike.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, Shane and I and Lars have spent so much time at the track, indoor and outdoor, just trying stuff and doing all this stuff and we feel like we have come a long way and we've got that thing to a pretty sweet spot.
Yep.
And, as you know, there's always trial and error with a new production bike as how it would relate to the race team. And then you start putting parts on it. And I mean, there was just so much work to do. And I think part of that was due to the late production in 2009.
Right.
The guys, we got the bike, what, like a month before Supercross when Ivan was going to ride it? And Andrew, was it Ivan and Andrew, I think?
Yeah, and Millsaps. Yeah.
And Millsaps.
Right.
And to give those guys a fair shake, we didn't have enough time to get the thing working good. I mean, I remember watching Ivan at Anaheim 1 a couple years back when he was riding that bike, and that thing was all over the place. So, to the riders' credit, they were right. The thing needed a lot of work, but now, think now it's 2 seasons later. We've made huge advancements, and I think as a rider coming to the Honda team, could feel pretty good about it. You know,
yeah. Reed loves it, and I mean I've had conversations with him, off the record and stuff. He really loves it. He loves it, and I don't know if I think he rode Davey's bike. You know, when he made those comments, he never said.
Uh-huh.
I just know that he was hanging out with Davey back then. So,
I think he did ride it. He rode it at Davey's place in Florida or wherever. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And he might have rode Jason Thomas's, which God help him if he did that. But,
And once again, that's a very stock bike.
Yeah,
know?
Right. What about Davey Millsaps? You know, I heard somebody told me that Kehoe, and I don't know if this is true, but someone said that Kehoe was like, yeah, he's probably now going to kick our ass because he's motivated and, he's kind of knows he's off the factory gravy train. But is this JGR thing going to light a fire under him? He did win a race last year. People forget about that. But what's Davey Millsaps' deal?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, we at Honda always fought, like, trying to keep the kid motivated and all that stuff. And, that's a hard job with Millsaps. You know, he's a hard guy to get motivated, and he's always more on the negative side than the positive side. And it's hard for me to understand that sort of deal because I really always tried to make the best out of whatever I could. And, I think if this doesn't motivate him, I don't know what will. I think he's going to probably do fine on the JGR Yamaha. And, obviously, we know those guys they've had their struggles, and especially with trying to do all their development over there in North Carolina, and that's another tough job. So, we all know Davey can ride; he's a talented kid, and it's sort of wherever his head's at on that Saturday or on that week. But he doesn't have a team ride; he didn't get a Honda factory ride for nothing. The kid can ride, and it's as of yet to see whether he's going to be able to capitalize on this new situation.
Also, J-Bone told me, he agreed with the lack of motivation, but with JGR, like, you're in their facility all day. You're riding or you're training with their trainer, and they're almost like a football team or a hockey team where they are not leaving you alone. So that could help in Davey's favor. He's always got someone prodding him, you know?
Well, it could, but it also could hurt because he's a guy that does not like to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. Although we all feel like he needs that structure.
He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it. And he's going to have to grow up as a kid and turn into a man and accept some of these responsibilities. He's the one who wanted to be a professional racer, and he's got that job now, and he's got to do something with it, which he has not done for the past 2 or 3 seasons.
You almost feel like there's you, there's a Stanton, there's even a Dungy, a Reed. There's one way to be a champion, which is sort of make it yourself. And then there's the Mike Alessis, the Davey Millsaps, even Carmichael, but it worked out great for Ricky, where it's almost like the kids are just these little mini warriors since they're 5 years old, and they get to an age of, say, I don't know, 21, 22, where they're like, you know what? I've worked too long, too hard my whole life, and now I don't want it as much. Do you agree with that?
Well, I've always said, and I mean, you can look back. I mean, I've been consistent on saying this. I believe that more oftentimes than not, you see a kid that was a great mini rider mm-hmm. not succeed when he gets to the big class. And especially the longer the time limit goes, the less success you see. I'm happy and consistent in saying that, you know, I believe you have a window. And take Bradshaw, for example. He was an awesome mini rider. Came up in the 125s, was awesome, but really had a year or two that was good in the 250s, and then after that, he kind of lost the fire.
Yeah.
And I think that was because his window was starting to close. With Dungy, I think we're going to see Dungy keep excelling and getting better and better and better. And even a kid like Ryan Villopoto, who was awesome as a kid, but really didn't start to enjoy the success until he was a little bit older.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see these guys excel more and more because they're not topped out.
Right.
You know, you take a kid like Mike Alessi, you know, who was amazing as a mini rider and all that, and pretty awesome as a 125 guy, and then now he's in a position where his window's starting to close a little bit because he's been doing it for so long. And I would agree with you because these guys probably feel like they've sort of, you know, when you get a little bit older, you look back and you go, man, I missed my whole youth. I missed being
right.
a kid. I missed all that. So I want to sort of, you know, take it easy and enjoy some of that. But, you know, we know you're only as good as your last race, and you have to keep working and working and working until you want to really call it a career because people forget fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bradshaw told me straight up on one of these shows, in 93 he hurt his knee, and he started hanging out at the lake, and he was, you know, he couldn't ride. He was on the lake, and he was water skiing or boating or whatever, and he was like, wow, this is really cool. I've never done this.
And, yeah.
You know, and yeah. he was just like, this is awesome. And then he started losing that drive and that fire. And just a weird way of doing it.
Well, I think that for sure that was easy to see. As fans, that was easy to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I caught some flack over the years for spending my time out on the boat and, you know, playing when it was time to play and all that
right.
stuff. But, you know, for me, really, that was probably my savior because I got to go out and just be normal.
Right.
And then when it was time to check back in to start working again, I had no problem with it.
Yeah. Funny how you talk about working with Shane Drew, getting back to this topic. And I like to bug Shane that he's the reason that you quit Honda in the first place because he was going to replace Skip.
Yeah, I know. We talk about that at the test track
yeah.
every now and again. It's pretty
exactly.
funny.
Funny, though. But you did say the Honda brings out a bike normally that's 100% ready, but that 97 CR250 was not ready.
Yeah, it was not ready.
No.
It was not ready. I mean, I was forced into making a change there.
Yeah. I did a podcast with Rich
which,
Taylor.
Thank God I did. Thank
yeah.
God I did, because I'm not sure I would have had those last three Supercross titles.
Yeah, exactly. Rich Taylor also told me, too, that frame was not ready. That bike was not ready.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, what about Josh Grant? I'm real bummed to see Shorty go. I wish it could have worked out that Honda could have kept him. I think he's a great guy and a solid rider. What about Josh Grant getting picked up? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's amazing. I mean, Josh. We all know Josh has amazing talent,
mm-hmm.
and you know the question is whether he can keep himself healthy. I know. Last week he crashed at the Honda track, I think, and hurt his foot. So he's going to be out for a couple weeks. But, you know, I think he's enjoying the Honda. It was just a little – I think he was trying to do the step up and spun a little bit on the takeoff and ended up coming up short and bouncing over and kind of tweaking his foot. But, yeah, I mean, the team is looking good. With Trey Kennard and Josh Grant, a couple of young kids, you know, we're looking for big success in these kids, and with someone like Andrew, for sure. I mean, Andrew's one of my favorites all time. You know, he's a great kid, great family, just a nice guy, and I consider him my friend. And he, you know, I'm happy that the opportunity he has to ride for KTM is great. I think those guys are making big strides and trying to be a better team, and I think he's in a good position. It's a bummer that he's not a Honda, but, you know, maybe we all know that every now and again change is good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know who Trey Kinnard is working with closely, so, of course, success will follow.
yeah. Well, let's hope so.
Well, he is riding good, though, right? Trey is...
He's riding great.
Yeah,
he's riding great. Yeah, I mean, we got 1 month to go, though. Let's just keep our fingers crossed that all these guys can stay healthy, and you and I as fans are going to have a great season to watch.
Right, right. Who is going to win, MC? Who is going to win this title or races or whatever? My pick is Stewart. I just he's just incredible on a bike. I know, you know, he does these weird things every now and then and stuff, but I think Larry hired Sergio. I don't know if you heard that or not.
I didn't hear that, but that's good.
Hired Sergio. I think their bike setup's going to be better. I think Stewart's going to do it, man, but that's just my sort of bench race feeling. What about yours?
Well, look, I was just in Chicago at Feld last week, and we were doing the pre-show. Me, Carmichael, Amig, and Jeff Stanton were all doing the pre-show, and we got the same question, like, who's going to do it? What do we think? And, you know, there's no denying that James Stewart's probably the best motorcycle rider in the world at this moment. I mean, he's got probably the most speed, the most raw speed we've ever seen.
Right.
And let's hope he can bounce back and ride good. But listen, we're not in the day and age where you can win five races and crash out two. You know, you gotta pack on the points. And, you know, a guy like Ryan Villopoto, who's had great success last year and then come up on an injury, you know, he's a guy that his style is a bit on edge, and we all know he can get it done, but at the same time, he's got to be able to stack points every weekend too.
Yep.
In my mind, James Stewart has not shown us that he's capable of being pressured for 16 rounds and getting the title done.
Yep.
He works well in a position like I was, where he has a big points lead, he has no pressure, and he works super good in those circumstances. Trey Kinnard, I feel like, is going to be able to do really well, and I think, you know, like I said, he's just starting out getting the confidence that he needs, and I think he's going to have a pretty good season.
Can he win?
You know, I mean, look, Davey Millsaps won a race last year. I think Trey can win.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Right.
But it's not going to be easy. I think my pick for the title is probably Dungey again, because he probably has the most well-rounded package there is out there, with believing in himself, has a great bike he's developed over the last two seasons, really carrying a lot of momentum with the title in his pocket from last year. But I can tell you this, if he gets it done in 2011, it will sure validate that 2010 title a lot more, because I think... And even myself, I'm guilty of saying this. You know, he's the champ from 2010, but in my mind, you got to beat the champion to get the respect. And with Dungey kind of having it, well, the second half of the season kind of having it his way, with Reed out, Stewart out, and Villopoto crashing out at the end, Dungey had a lot of time to really grow and develop, and I think that's going to help him into 2011. So I think if he can get started off strong, he's probably got, in my mind, the most consistent chance of winning the title.
Right.
But, you know, there's always a thing like with Stewart. You know, he can go on a roll and win, but he's got to be able to get maximum points on his off days, and that's what's really going to count, I think.
I just think you're right. Yeah, as usual, MC calls it. But
I think you know, I mean, there's no doubt Stewart's the quickest guy out there. I mean, and let's hope that Reed can be in the mix too, but I think that's going to be a little tougher deal. He's got a lot of development to do and a lot of learning to do with being a private team. And
I think mentally,
you know, we all know he can do it as a rider, but
I think mentally,
there's a lot of element to go to this.
Mentally, Reed's got the FU sort of mentality Everybody counts me out. You know, I'm the third highest winningest Supercross rider of all time, and I think he's one ahead of James.
Yeah.
And
he's
going to show him what's up. I think he's got that mental toughness. Like, you know, he's a brawler, you know, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That can work for you and against you.
True.
I see that if the season starts off great for Reed and starts riding really well, he's gonna be a title threat.
Yeah.
But I see that if he has some races in the beginning where it kind of dings his confidence a little, I see that could go the opposite direction as well.
Like we saw in the outdoors, which is exactly what we saw in the outdoors. He had a bad moto at Mount Morris, and he kind of packed it in from there, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And a few years ago we would bet the farm on Reed, but now I think he's a little bit unproven. Obviously, we know he's motivated. I think he's motivated more than anyone out there to prove that he can still ride because he feels like everyone's taking a shit on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, some of that stuff's kind of come to his, you know, he did it himself. So either way, it's going to be a great season. You look at a guy like Brett Metcalf who joined Factory Suzuki with Dungy. I mean, he has a lot of momentum from outdoors, a great bike. He could be a sleeper. He could be riding good. You know, let's see what happens with him.
Or Davey.
Davey. I mean, look at the JGR team. Yeah, Davey. I mean, who's it? Justin Brayton's on that team. He had a couple good rides last year. Who's the Cowie guy? There's Bill Putto and
Weimer, which everyone's saying he's riding really good at the test track right now. So,
I think Weimer he'll do well. I don't see him winning races, but he'll do well. He's usually a slower guy to get going, but you know it's good that he made the transition.
And even a dude like Tedesco, who I thought didn't have a greatest year last year, and then he was quick to point out that he did podium twice on a Valley Yamaha. You know what I mean? So. There's Tedesco. He's just a veteran, you know. He's going to be there. It's going to be exciting, though. You're right. Yeah.
Based on what we've seen in the last two seasons, the only one really gaining momentum is Bill Poto and Dungy.
Yeah.
So, and I heard Bill Poto's riding awesome at the test track. I was talking to Button the other day, and he's like, "Man, you should see Bill Poto at the test track." Yeah. So, if that is the case, then he's going to come out swinging too. Now, the question with him is he going to be able to hold it together week in and week out till Vegas?
Yeah.
You know, I think with a guy like Dungy, who did make some mistakes last year with that loop out at that one race. He got away with some stuff, but, you know, he does a real good job at damage control. And, you know, with 10 guys, say 6 or 8 guys that could win races, that's going to count in the long run.
Right. You know how in some movies Vince Vaughn's like kind of fat and in other movies he's skinny? Well, I think we now see the skinny Ryan Villopoto, like Alden's working with him and, you know, he's in killer shape right now. So,
well, we know that being in shape really builds a lot of mental capacity too. You know, when you start feeling like you're the man and you feel like you're the most fit guy out there, then that builds confidence, and that's a dangerous combination. So,
I don't even know if you can answer this or if you have you ridden the new Yamaha?
No, I haven't ridden the new Yamaha. No,
I feel I like that might be. I don't know if that thing is that good. I don't know if it's that good of a bike.
You know what? A couple of my friends have them in the, you know, obviously they're just production bikes.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, and they got them when they first came out, and they've probably improved since then over the season or two. But, you know, kind of all that hype on what was supposed to be so great, I'm not sure it's...
Yeah.
I don't think it's any different than what's out there. So,
I think this might be the one thing that James has going against him, to be honest. I just don't know how good that thing is. And, you know, we saw it last year. It did not work good that first race. You know, Dungy almost beat him, and it was basically bucking Bronco in the whoop. So I hope Larry has figured that out anyways.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to Larry about a week ago, and he's like, man, finally I've got James, and that's probably due to Sergio going over there.
Yeah.
I've probably got James. He's got James on some stuff that actually – some suspension that actually moves. So that could play into their favor. You know, James has always typically ridden a bike that would be unrideable to any of us because it's so stiff. But if he can get, you know, if he can get that thing working a little bit better, I mean, look, James, there's no doubt James is going to win races.
Yeah.
The guy's fast. And so, you know, it's hard to say what's going to happen, but up to this point, I don't think the Yamaha is any different than any other bike out there. It's going to be a challenge getting all of, you know, that working as well as everybody else getting their bikes working.
Yeah, good points. And what about Roger going to KTM? What's your thoughts on that? Can a manager make a difference?
You know, there's been a lot of talk about that, and Roger's he's been a great team manager at Team Suzuki, but I don't think in the first year that can make a difference. I think over time he's really going to be able to really turn that program around and do some good things, and most of all, give it some credibility. You know, up to this point, KTM's, even when I did my little thing with them, I mean, they have a hard time at getting the credit they deserve. You know, winning world championships and doing all that is one thing, but winning a Supercross title is a whole different deal. And I think he can definitely get that boat turned in the right direction, but I think it's going to take time because, you know, as much as we love Short, KTM's not in the position to have like a Dungey right now. But you know what? If you think about it, that could be the next move, maybe next year, you know. So it's hard to say what can happen, but I don't think a manager can make a difference in a matter of a month or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably a good point. Okay, have you ridden those things? Have you spent any time on those bikes?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Hey, what do you think of you were the first guy to go Supercross only in a pre-internet age. Like it's a source of a lot of fans discontent with James, and even when Reed did it on Larry's team, what's your thoughts on that? Obviously you've been on the record many times as saying it extended your career. But do you think that? I think that shit bothers James. I know he reads those message boards. I know for sure he does, and I think that bothers him.
Yeah.
And I don't know why the fans are like that. I'm not a believer of who cares. Make your best deal, you know? But
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. This is what I think about James. You know, James had a struggle the last season or two. How long has it been since he's won his Supercross title? 2 years?
No, he won in 2009. He was the defending champion.
So he won the title last year, okay, or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I think that with James racing Dungey, it wouldn't hurt him to go race some outdoor races, just stay in it, you know? I think the Supercross season is long and treacherous for sure, but with having a bad season, it's probably not a bad idea to get out and ride some outdoors just to stay with it,
right,
you know, like throughout this coming year. But, I mean, I have no problems having a guy race a Supercross contract only. I think if that's what the guy wants to do, that's what he wants to do. I mean,
we all know that,
you know, there's a lot of fans out there that are a little, you know, they get upset by that.
Yeah, there is.
We know that the Supercross is the main thing for the manufacturers. And, you know, if he didn't come out and win the title, then it probably wouldn't be a bad idea for him to ride outdoor. But, you know, when I did that, I needed to do that because I was just getting burned. I couldn't race that long anymore without feeling like I was going to have to retire. So for me, it helped. But in these guys' situations, they're still young, man. I mean, what's James, 25, 26 maybe?
Yeah.
And, 26. I mean, outdoors part of it.
Yeah. When? How old were you when you did it?
I think I was 20, maybe 28.
28, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What was that, 98 season? 99, 2000. I retired when I was 30, so maybe 27.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like, and it seems like, LaRocco did it, Wyndham did it, you did it, without really, and Wyndham still does it, without anybody really giving them shit about it. But it just seems like with Reed and Stewart, man, they just get the wrath of the fans.
And, yeah.
You know,
I
don't get it, but.
Well, you know what, hey, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, right.
It goes back to their attitude, you know?
Yeah.
And we all know,
just be yourself.
With both those two guys, with both those two guys, it's, you know, just looking from the outside, it's been a real hard for the fans to get to know those guys because they don't talk, they don't do anything, they don't, you know, it's all corporate, you know, and nobody knows the real person. And I think if the fans felt like they were a little more connected to those guys, they'd probably cut them a little more slack.
Yeah, no, probably. I know Larry's frustrated with James, and sometimes his lack of PR, because when I do these things with him, these podcasts. He's great. He's awesome. He's funny and outgoing, and, you know, he laughs and jokes, and I don't know why he doesn't do more. I feel like he's been – I think he feels like he's been burned by fans slash media, so it's basically he's going to retreat further into his shell, you know?
Well, you know what? Hey, you got to – you know how these guys work on their writing, their practice, their writing, their – they have to build a relationship with the fans too. And, you know, sometimes that kind of goes – kind of goes by the wayside, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think the TV show really helps either.
Well, yeah, that's another hour-long podcast. I wish they didn't sell the pits so much and come down to the pits, and you know, and I wish they sold these guys more and more the racing, but I guess whatever. You got to pay the bills, right?
Yeah, true.
Okay, quick rapid fire before we let you go. Do you know these are questions from fans? Do you know what Vital MX is?
Yeah, I know what it is.
Do you go on it?
It's a website. Yeah, I go on it.
Okay.
I went on it actually the other day to look at the video of me
and read the comments.
No, I went on the video from Day in the Dirt where they had like a little part of it. They had like 6 or 8 minutes of. You know, I had a good battle with that Josh Strange at Day in the Dirt, and I raced the pro class last weekend. And I mean, he followed me around for 35 minutes. I hadn't done a 35-minute moto, and I don't know how long. And it was funny because towards the end of the race, he was getting really close. I had a couple, you know, 4 or 5 seconds on him for the whole race, and then at the end of the race, he started getting real close because I was just starting to get tired, or I don't know what I was doing. And then the white flag came out, so I got some energy and ended up pulling it off, but. I was having a fight with myself the whole time trying to figure out, okay, do you want to race and win this race or do you want to treat this casual? We're at Day in the Dirt. We're just having fun, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyways, the racer ended up winning. So I ended up sticking in there and winning the race. So I knew there was a little clip on there, so I went on there. But, yeah, I go on there. Vital MX, I go on there.
And you read the message boards or no?
I don't. Okay. I don't really. I only read message boards when they pertain to me, really. So, like, with that video on Racer X came out, I was interested. I was interested in what people were saying, but for the most part, I don't really read the comments.
Your best Kenny Watson story, because, you know, I feel like I've done a good and a bad thing. I've released Kenny to fans and people with this show we do. And so people now kind of know Kenny, good and bad. Give me your best Kenny Watson story that's clean.
Oh, man. You know, I guess with Kenny, we always have so many stories of these crazy back-in-the-day things we used to do playing poker. And, you know, the guy would just – we would end up on these Europe trips playing poker and, you know, we'd all come home with these IOUs on paper that were like, you know, $1,000, $1,500. And with Kenny Watson, you know, I think I remember one time he owed me some money and it took like a whole year to get paid. But you got to give it to him. He was not scared. And that's what we love about Kenny Watson.
Were you there when Skip got choked out by somebody in a poker game?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, you know who that was? That was Roger DeCoster's son.
That's it. Roger, he told the story on the air the other day. DeCoster's kid got choked out Skip.
Dude, that was the craziest thing. Like, I forget his name.
Nigel. Was it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know him too well. All I know is Roger's younger son, Mika, who's a great kid. But
Roger's other kid's a bit of a rebel, I guess.
Well, yeah, this kid, I think he was an outcast, you know, and I think, I can't remember what the context of the whole thing was, but I was sitting there and I was like, are we going to do something? We should kick this guy's ass right now. What's going on? And I think he was just playing, to be honest, as a joke. It started out, but then it actually got a little bit serious and Skip was passed out. And then what were we supposed to do? We should have kicked this guy's ass, but I think everyone was like a deer in headlights going, is this really happening?
That's what Kenny said. Everybody kind of was like, ha ha ha. And I was like, oh wait, Skip's actually losing consciousness here. Like Skip's actually.
Yeah. I know. That was nuts. I mean, yeah, I was there, but that was bullshit.
Right.
If I could replay it again, that would have never happened.
Yeah, exactly. One of those things where you're like, why didn't I do this? Like Barnett. Yeah. Barnett's probably like, why did I jump the triple?
Yeah.
Hey, with Carmichael moving to NASCAR and now Travis Pastrana heading there, is MC having any thoughts of doing so?
No way. I tried the NASCAR thing a couple years ago, just messing around with Dale Jr. Had me on one of his teams, and Monster and me and Dale Jr. did this little short track project, and
I heard it was way too much work for you.
It was one of those things that I had to do because the opportunity was there, but after doing it, I was like, dude.
Yeah.
It was short tracks, and I was like so bored.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to be great at that. And I figured out real quick I was a dirt guy. I'm enjoying racing. I'm enjoying racing dirt off road trucks.
I heard too that somebody said that it was way too much work for you. Like it was like a second. You were like, F that. I've already done my work. Like I'm not going to move to Carolina and just race short tracks for 100 years to try to get better. You were like, F that.
Yeah. And look, I'm 35 years old, like seriously,
yeah.
Am I going to do this? Like, yeah, my wife's going to laugh at me. Like, yeah, we're moving to North Carolina.
Yeah, so, no, exactly.
Yeah, no. It was one of those deals where, hey, the opportunity was there, and I didn't have to pay for it. So, hey, let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
And I found out real quick that I was like, you know what? I'm this is not me. I don't need to do this. I definitely wasn't looking for a second career.
Yeah. I think that's what someone told me. It was like going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Here's a question from a reader. It looks like you and Don Maeda have buried the hatchet because, you did the first show I did, we were at Racer X, and now I'm at Transworld, and you talked a story about how Don released those photos or whatever happened. Cost you a lot of money. And an astute reader has noticed that you've done videos with Don since then. So you buried the hatchet, and how did that come about?
Yeah, we're on a good page now. You know, for a long time, I had a lot of resentment, and there was a lot of, over the years, there was a lot of hate going on, and you guys all know that. I mean, I get along with everybody, and it was just harder to not be friends than to be friends, and, Don and I interacted a little bit. He sent me a long, very nice letter of apology, which is all I really wanted over the years, and since that day, that was last year, before the Transworld Moto Awards, when I got Rider of the Year, I think, or Lifetime Achievement Award, or something like that. And really, since that day, it's been great. Don and I we email each other, and when we're in the same place, we talk. I mean, there's no animosity anymore, and I've enjoyed putting that behind us.
I know, dude. He called me the day he did a video with you at the Honda track the very first time.
Uh-huh.
And he was very excited that you extended that olive branch. He was very excited.
Yeah.
He was dude, MC, I was so weird. And he just said, hey, Don, why don't you film this or something or whatever, however it went down. And he was very happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Hey, I was a kid when all that stuff happened. He was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just a circumstance that just was terrible, and it ended up terrible for a long time. But,
you should,
like I said, I'm happy to get that behind us and yeah, there's no more chip on the shoulder, especially from me on that side of things. That pissed me off for a long time, dude.
Yeah, you should send him a bill for $250,000. Send him an invoice.
Yeah.
Hey, Don, now that we're buddies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now that we're buddies, can you just start paying me back?
That's how much it was, right? Didn't you say it was $250?
Yeah. It was like $250,
Damn. Okay, a couple more. What do you remember about the Pontiac Supercross when your handlebars mount broke?
Oh gosh! I mean, I remember the crash. I remember all of it. I mean, I got smacked from Larry Ward. I think it was in the corner afterwards. But, I broke my navicular right then and there. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Little mistake on my part. Came up short. Endoed. Kind of got dingy when I went over the bars into the turn, and then got smacked by Larry Ward. And that was it. I mean, realistically, that crash. When I stopped racing outdoor in Mount Morris in 98, leading the points, I had fallen in practice there. So the Pontiac crash, basically is what started my Supercross career only.
Yeah. Who knew? And then another question is, did you catch any drama over the conversation that you and I had about RC being called the GOAT? I know there was a bit of a history there.
No. Ricky gives me as much respect as I give him. You know, Ricky's great. I've known him since he was a little kid, and
right.
I'll say it again: the GOAT thing is just a PR marketing thing for him, and it's worked well. to use that for him, because it's not like he has this other nickname and all this stuff. You know, that's a PR marketing thing, and they did a good job with that.
Right.
If you sit down with Ricky sitting next to you, he will tell you that he is not the GOAT when it comes to Supercross.
That's all you and that's all you need.
Yeah, and I don't need him to say it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, cool. Hey, thank you, Jeremy McGrath, for doing the BTOsports.com Transworld Motocross podcast. Always a good time. And I know the first show we did was probably in my top five or six of all-time favorites. So just want to go right up there and get a lot of listens, I'm sure. So
Yeah. Well, cool, man. It's good to catch up. It's been a while, and maybe we can make this a more regular thing. I'm excited for the new season. I hope my Honda boys can get some good races, get some momentum going. And
I like how you don't duck anything. You don't duck anything. I like it.
Listen, I'm not. Once again, we'll go back to that other interview I did. You know, I'm not in the position to have to say a bunch of BS. I mean, I'm not afraid to say.
I'm
not smack talking. I'm just talking truth, and
right.
You know, everyone knows I don't talk shit. I just talk the truth, and you know, that's the thing that I want to see change back in our sport. Is I want these guys to feel like they can say what they need to say, and you know, there's a bit of confidence that goes with that. So anyway, I appreciate having the outlet, being able to have the voice to talk about some of this stuff. And like I said, as a fan, I'm looking forward to watching a great, great new season coming up here.
Well, right on. If I get tickets to the Knothole Club, I'll see you up there at A1. If not, we'll see you around.
All right. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks. All right, MC. See you later.
Okay, later.
Bye.
This has been the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Transworld Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like being a dead horse. I mean, you know, and I know from personal experience, didn't anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled pits and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you sit there, you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I will let this die.